Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is Woo-hoo! Our bracket rundown show. I think it's our final bracket rundown show of the season. Wow.
Where's it going? Is it? Yeah.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs, John Titel, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, an all-star panel of bracketologists, Andy Puppet.
What? I'm an all-star.
And we might be joined by John Sleek in a little bit here. He was running late this evening as well, but this is the show where we are going to be revealing a consensus bracket. David, can you explain everyone what that means?
Well, it's sort of like cross-country voting. It's, you know, exactly the way the top 25 works, only we're ranking about 55 teams. You come up with the consensus and build the seed list and then bracket it. And just everybody watching, if you're watching for the first time, it seems like we're getting more and more viewers. We just want you to know that this is exactly how the selection committee does it. What happens is the last game ends. It's about an hour before the selection show, and this is how they pick the field.
David, and, David, no, no. Yeah. The selection committee uses a completely different process. We do this for the sake of time. The real process would take about a week, which is what the selection committee takes to do this.
Yes. Couple of things. In reality, we are not on this show trying to guess the selection committee. Although we do have two selection committee guessing experts, this is what we think it should be, not necessarily what we think it will be.
Right. And this is as of everybody submitted their votes earlier today. This is they were recording this a little after 9 o'clock on Monday evening. Mostly before the games today. In fact, completely. I was ready to make any changes if there had been an upset in the early games today, especially with the Wofford-Greensboro game, but it didn't happen. But let's go ahead and reveal the blank bracket. If this works here, it should be coming up on the screen in a second now.
If we see San Antonio, I'm going to be very okay.
No, San Antonio. There we go. And there's the blank bracket. What I'm going to do is start with the teams, the highlighted spots in yellow there. Those are what we call the protected seeds. They are the top 16 teams, the teams that will be favored to make the Sweet 16. We'll reveal those one at a time in order, have a little discussion about them. We'll go a little bit quicker after we get through those top teams. But I don't think it's any surprise. Rocco, let me start with you here. Number one team, and I think this was unanimous across the board. How about Virginia?
Agreed. 100% agreed. Only two losses to Duke. They've now won 8 in a row. Had a little trouble with Louisville last weekend, but finished very strong as they've done many times this year and won by 5. So, yeah, Virginia looking great. Going to D.C., going to Columbia. 100% agree here.
Right. And obviously, if they win the ACC tournament, it's an absolute lock. But Titel, what if they don't win the ACC tournament? How far could they drop?
I think they're stuck on the one line, which is a good place to get stuck, obviously. If they get upsets early on and the SEC champ and two other ACC teams and Gonzaga, it's possible, but I think, like Rocco said, like near lock, if not lock.
Okay, but do they drop to number two, number three, number four overall?
Overall.
Where on the one list?
Upset and Duke and Carolina are in the title game and Gonzaga wins and Kentucky or Tennessee wins, like I could see them as the fourth number one, I suppose. But when your only two losses all year are to one of the other best teams in the country so far.
A quick bit of trivia here about Virginia. I did some research before the show, and I'm sorry Joby Fortson is not part of the panel tonight. No one in the history of the NCAA tournament has ever lost to a 16 seed and then made the round of 32 the following year.
Okay. Well, yes. Get that. So that could be historic by Virginia,
right? Yeah,
if they can get by that first round game,
right? Yeah, but I mean, they are on the brink of history.
Let's take a look at the number two team overall, David. They are playing right now. It is the Gonzaga Bulldogs.
Ooh, Gonzaga too.
And the big news today, though, is Killian Tilly back in the lineup tonight against Pepperdine.
Yeah, not that they needed him tonight, but again, it's good that I think getting a couple games in against not a good Pepperdine team, but you would assume a fairly decent team in the championship game kind of gets him a little conditioned for the NCAA tournament. I'm surprised they're all the way up here. I've been Gonzaga, I thought their biggest proponent. I didn't even have them as two overall. We'll discuss the team that I had, I guess, when you get to them, but this is a very, very, very dangerous team. They've only lost two games on the year. it wouldn't surprise me if I'm pretty sure both of those teams are going to land on the top two lines, and one of them they barely lost, and the other one they were without two key players.
And I would ask the same question I asked about Virginia, is how far they could fall if they don't win the West Coast Conference Tournament, but that would be a joke if they lost the West Coast Conference Tournament. Yeah. It's not going to happen. They're already up pretty big on Pepperdine, it's very early. So let's just go on to the number three team at Tytel. Number three overall is North Carolina, surprisingly.
They've been having a fantastic month. Obviously, when you sweep Duke, you're in rare air because that doesn't happen too much. The fact that Zion played for literally 30 seconds of those two games in total is a big, huge asterisk. But a win's a win, and a win's a win, and Duke's Duke.
And Duke is Duke. And Rocco, number four overall, we discussed it, I think, in our last show, whether this could happen. As of right now, our panel at least has three ACC teams on the one line.
So, yeah, I mean, Duke, I think, has the resume to warrant this. I think it's probably between them and Kentucky, maybe a small argument for a couple other teams, but I think most people would agree that's the argument today. Duke is an interesting case because, obviously, the Zion injury continues to linger. We don't know how that's going to play out later this week or next week. Bernard Muir got interviewed during halftime of Houston-Cincinnati, who's, of course, the committee chairman this year. And they are making it a point to talk about injuries, even coaches being suspended as part of the criteria. So I do think if Zion makes a comeback and it's announced he's making a comeback, that they'll probably find a way to get these guys on the one line.
Yeah, yeah. I tell this. Zion supposedly going to play. Marquise Bolden out for the ACC tournament, though. A blow on Duke. And I think you have a note about the this is not the first time a conference has gotten 3-1 seeds, correct?
Which seems amazing. So everybody knows, I believe, 85 is the last time that a conference had, maybe the only, that had three members of one conference in the Final Four with Villanova and St. John's and Georgetown. I think Stalica pointed out last week, 2009, the Big East had three number one seeds, Pitt, UConn, and Louisville. Hilarious to think how many of them are still left in the Big East. And ironically, the fourth number one seed that year, Carolina, was the champion.
Yeah.
Well, for the Zags then.
Yeah. Ahead, well, a couple of things. To build on what Rocco said, I mean, there's several different ways to interpret that. One is that they're going to talk about injuries and suspensions, and I know that they do. But when you talk to people that have been on the committee, one of the things that they say that they evaluate is in measuring, it's more to measure the value of wins and losses more so than it is to count or discount what a team does with or without a key player. Kansas is an extreme example. If you beat them in November and December when they were destroying the planet, you're probably going to be given more credit than if you beat them at least at home now, because Kansas has not played the same on the road that they did earlier in the year. So I think you got to keep that in mind too. I don't think that they're just going to ignore what Duke did or didn't do without Zion Williams. And having said that, like if we can pull up a couple of these profiles, Duke and you know, somebody else, I still can't get past the fact.
Duke and Gonzaga.
Yeah, Duke and Gonzaga. That, well, Duke beat Virginia twice, and they also beat Kentucky. And I mean, it is the if you were just to top out Duke, and I realize you got to do more than top a team out, I still think that they top out higher than everyone else. And if they were to win the ACC tournament, I think they would be the number one overall again, even though they lost to Carolina twice and finished two games behind Virginia.
Well, let's I guess the other question here is David, let me ask you this, though. ACC tournament, Virginia, Duke, Carolina, we've all put them on the one side. Could there be a chance, assuming these three teams all make it to the semis in the ACC, that we have four better teams in the ACC semifinals, so we end up within the Final Four at the end of the year?
I mean, potentially. I mean, what you're looking at, and it's kind of funny, we were discussing, the ACC is a 15-team format. I know they use a ladder for the opening rounds, and it's not a standard bracket, but if it were a standard bracket, it is arguably more difficult to get out of that bracket or win the ACC tournament than it is to win a regional and go to the Final Four.
Let's make sure I don't mess this up here. I messed something up. Please ignore that.
You messed something up there.
We're not on the five line yet.
We have points 2, 3, and 4 to go before we
ignore what you just said. A number five overall title, Kentucky.
If you like Blue Bloods, this is the one for you. I don't know how the Heels would feel about facing Kentucky in the state of Kentucky. Seems a little unfair, but obviously you got to go where you can go, and I'm sure that they'd love to at least get the advantage of playing in Columbia, which I believe South Carolina, for the first two rounds, so they get some home court there, but not fun to play Kentucky in Louisville, even though I wonder if all the Louisville faithful will come out and cheer against Kentucky.
Probably.
Yeah, and Kentucky, obviously the team that with the best chance to sneak up there and get into the one line, but Rocco, number six overall, maybe a team that could also sneak into the one line. The other SEC team, Tennessee.
Yeah, and Tennessee, you know, took a loss to Auburn. I had them, I think most of us last week had them as the last number one. I still like Tennessee's resume a lot. It's probably the cleanest. All their losses are incredibly reasonable. So from the loss standpoint, I think they're the most impressive team. But, you know, they don't have the quantity of wins as like the Carolinas, the Kentuckys, and the Duke's heavy wins. But, I mean, they're a very, very solid club, and they're in the one seed picture. They just need a little bit of help now.
Yeah, and there you go. David, like you mentioned, that Kansas loss, yeah, it's a loss to Kansas, but it was that full strength Kansas team back
then. Yeah, on a neutral floor in overtime. One of the things I like Tennessee as well, but like there's about four teams here that I just sort of go round and round and round with. And when you look at some of the resumes, like if you look at Kentucky, North Carolina, well, Kentucky and North Carolina, for instance, and to a degree, Tennessee, like put Kentucky and North Carolina next to each other, because I realized that we had North Carolina higher and we actually had them two spots higher. But these to me look almost identical. In terms of, it takes a second to load. The top is extremely high. Because Kentucky has the wins. You got Tennessee up there now, even Tennessee. I mean, they've got the neutral floor win against Gonzaga. They've got the win against Kentucky. There isn't quite as much up there, but if you look at Kentucky, like Tennessee, North Carolina, everybody's sort of beating teams that are of a real high caliber. And if you've done this in the past, and we all have, it is not uncommon to see a one seed that didn't beat another one seed or even another two seed. Like, they'll have wins against protected seeds away from home. All of these four have beaten one and two seeds away from home. It is really remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And that's why I think this is such a close debate here between these teams.
Yeah.
I think there is a gap, though. Rocco, going down to the next teams here. Let's go to the number seven team overall. Not a surprise, but I don't think this is a team that has a shot at a one. That's Michigan State.
Yeah, you're probably right. They would need a lot of help, probably even a Gonzaga bad loss, which doesn't look like it will happen. I would agree with you. They're probably a little too far off. I do love the amount of wins that they've had. It's been incredible that they've beat Michigan twice without Ward. So it's a tough out, but they've got the bad, which is the Illinois loss and the sweep by Indiana. And now maybe have to play Indiana a third time, so watch out for that.
Yeah, they'll get the winner of an Indiana-Ohio State first-round game. Tytel, the other two seed here, and this might start to become a bit of a debate whether who should be here, but we're still holding on to the other Big Ten team, Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, getting swept by your arch rival without two of their best players is a difficult pill to swallow. That being said, like, they have so many wins on their resume, and they're a good team. A little injury problem of their own. I believe Charles Matthews has been out with an ankle injury. And unfortunately, like, the last thing I want to do is have to fly out. Not that any of the one seeds are easy, but at least, like, Kentucky gets to stay in their home state. Michigan State gets to stay in the Midwest. It seems like a big punishment for Michigan to have to travel all the way out to the West Coast to play against a West Coast team.
Well, I think that's the penalty of being number eight overall, though, is exactly that. That's
everybody loves Anaheim. It's sunny and, like, weather's nice. And
David, the team that might – that's maybe with the best shot of sneaking in here and taking Michigan's spot over there in the Midwest region, LSU.
Yeah, they certainly have the opportunities. Now, LSU has had better off the court weeks.
Yeah, you can say that.
You know, I mean, there's good weeks and there's bad weeks. This is the latter, what they're kind of experiencing now. Everybody said that, well, they didn't seem distracted against Vanderbilt. Well, I think that was largely due to the fact that they were playing Vanderbilt. For those watching that don't know, because I definitely do and I'm not playing this off, aside from Will Wade, are they at full strength? Or are they going to –
Well, but I know Smart was held out of the Vanderbilt game.
Yeah, is he going to play? Because if he is finished, if he doesn't play in the SEC tournament, they're not as good without him as they are with him. And if he doesn't play in the NCAA tournament, same thing. I mean, what is their ceiling without him as compared to what it is with him?
Rocco, have you heard?
I haven't heard. No, I think it's still pending, and I think the assumption is he's out until otherwise noted, right? So, right.
And if you go by how long the NCAA takes to make decisions on those things, he's done. Maybe for a couple of years.
Is it LSU that's holding him out, or the NCAA?
LSU.
LSU. Okay. Yeah. What is going on here? And I'll only spend 20 seconds explaining it. Well, why would they hold him out? The reason is if he is deemed retroactively ineligible. And he plays in tournament games. I don't know how the SEC works, but if he plays in NCAA tournament games, every cent that LSU makes has to go back. That's the biggest thing, and they have to vacate the wins. So that is why it's better to play in two games and keep the money than it is to go to the Final Four and have to pay it all back and vacate the win.
Well, I think for their fans, it's vacating the wins that counts more than the money, but –
yeah.
And I don't know that LSU was exactly hurting for money, but Titel, right, yeah. Number 10 overall, Houston.
Houston, hello. They are playing great. I really thought that Cincinnati was going to take it to them on their home court, and they absolutely got taken to the woodshed. They were leading in the second half, and then Houston just took over. I believe I scored them 44-22 down the stretch. And
it was amazing.
Early. It was a very dominant performance. This team is like 10 points away from being undefeated this year. I don't love their matchup with Kentucky just because I don't recall Houston being that big and long a team. And if Free Travis is healthy, that could make all the difference in the world in that one. But they are absolutely deserving of a 3-seed.
Well, and John, let me ask this question, though. Houston, let's say they win the American Championship. LSU, Michigan both fall early in their conference tournaments. Definitely possible with LSU with all the off-court stuff. Is there a shot at a 2-seed still here?
That is a little trickier just because I don't think they have as much good on their resume as some other teams only because they didn't play an amazing non-conference schedule this year. But obviously, if they can sweep like Temple, UCF, Cincy back-to-back-to-back, those are three quality wins right there. So, again, in the realm of possibility, but doubtful at best, I think.
I think it is UCF as a potential semifinal there and then the winner of a Temple-Cincinnati game for the final. So they could get two of those games in the AAC tournament. David, number 11 overall, this is coming up in the, let's see which region, the West region there, the best team in the Big 12, Texas Tech.
Yeah, like the way they're playing, and again, first place team, they have a chance to add to their resume even more, maybe cement a 3. I think I don't remember if I had them in the 3 or the 4. I know it was either at the bottom of the 3 or the top of the 4, but I really, really like how this team is playing.
Right.
And if they were to face Michigan, if the chalk were to hold, I would pick them to beat Michigan, even though I seeded them lower.
And Rocco, we've already had 3 ACC teams in to finish up the 3 line. We have our third Big Ten team in here with Purdue.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue well-deserved. You know, they just got a share of the Big Ten championship, big celebration over the weekend. You know, they've been just incredible all year since the early rough start. It's well-deserved. I have them actually in the 11 spot, so I've got them safely on this line for now. I think it would take a pretty big disaster for them to fall further and have somebody jump them. So I like them here.
Right. Let's go to the 4 line a little bit quicker here now. But Titel, starting off the 4 line is yet another ACC team. Here's our fourth one, Florida State, which could round out that Final Four caliber ACC semifinals, among other things.
And unfortunately, the reward of being the top 4 seed is that I assume the worst 5 seed has to go play them in Jacksonville. So good luck with that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that spot in Jacksonville held open for Florida State all the way down to the 4 line, but that's how it worked out. But David also coming in here on the 4 line, number 14 overall, is our second as our co-champion of the Big 12, Kansas State, out of the Midwest.
I notice, and again, I don't know where he personally voted for him. I noticed that Titel in his bracket or committee guessing brackets hasn't liked Kansas State that much. I mean, what is it that you think the committee doesn't like about him? Because when I look at him, I see, well, first place in the Big 12 is some decent wins on the road. It looks pretty protected seedish to me.
No, now I have him as a 4. I think early on I had him as an 11 because, frankly, when you lose to Tulsa, that is a huge ding on your resume. But obviously, they've got it going. Huge injury to deal with. Dean Wade, as you might have noticed in my conference tourney preview, they beat Texas Tech with him. They lost to the Red Raiders without him. And if he's hurt this week, I don't see that Kansas State could beat Texas Tech in a title game without him.
Yep.
Good point. Rocco, number 15 overall, second to last team to make our protected seeds here, the Wisconsin Badgers. Here's now our fourth Big Ten team in the protected seeds.
Yeah, and I think you got this one nailed right on as well. I think it's just a debate of whether they're going to Hartford or San Jose. But, I mean, it's about equal distance each side, right? So, you know, in this region, they would be matched up with Carolina in a potential Sweet 16. Be a tough matchup for them. Wisconsin's kind of been all over the place. That game yesterday, what, they have a 20-point lead, blew it, and then won in overtime. So, interested to see how they'll perform out of this position. But the resume warrants it, so I'm good with it.
And David, our last protected seed, there was definitely a bunch of different teams in play here, but I know you want to discuss them. It is the Kansas Jayhawks.
Well, I had them on the 5, and okay. I'm almost certain the real committee is going to put them up here, so maybe I should basically learn to deal with it. No, I shouldn't. They're not playing like a protected seed. Ever since the injury, this is what they've done. They've been amazing at home. They've been able to beat top 10 teams at home. They've been able to beat almost no one that's above NIT caliber on the road. That doesn't scream protected seed to me.
Well, Ty-Tom, don't you still have to give them credit for what they did early in the season and put them up here?
Sure. That's why I put them on the 5 line.
Yes. I was unhappy to hear that LeGerald Vick isn't coming back because I think that is just too much to overcome. Azubuike's big enough as it is literally and figuratively, but no, they did have some top-notch wins in November, December, and they've done okay in Big 12 play. I believe they spanked Kansas State just a couple weeks ago. So I think I had them on my 4 line, but if you want to slide them to a 5, I don't think that's a big deal.
Right. Well,
they're going to get a 4. I mean, I think. Yeah, committee will give them a 4.
Rocco, we've got the top 16 teams out there. Is there anything that you think is glaringly wrong or right about what we did?
I think the biggest one for me throughout the process of revealing here was LSU versus Michigan. I think if the suspension and all that does come into play, I think Michigan will end up above LSU, but I think if you just look resume to resume, I do like LSU's resume quite a bit more than Michigan's right now, just because they played the 10th best schedule. They have a better away record. They've got better road wins, and Michigan's schedule's in the 200s. So for me, I like LSU better resume wise, but this could get real interesting with everything happening in Baton Rouge.
Go ahead.
Good points. Oh, I was just going to say really good points. I wanted to say something, but I'm thinking I might wait until the 5 line.
Then you can wait because we have John Salika joining us now. And,
oh, well, then forget that. I want to talk.
And Salika, I want to bring you right in here as we reveal our 5 line. This is going to be all 4 teams coming up here, although if you're paying attention, actually, everybody, you got to see them very briefly earlier. But Salika, our 5 line is Maryland, Virginia Tech, Villanova, and Marquette, the top 2 Big East teams both getting in there on the 5 line.
Frankly, I'm starting to wonder if Marquette is going to remain on the 5 line at the rate they're going with 4 straight losses, and a win on Thursday is certainly by no means guaranteed if they end up facing the Johnnies. But at the same time, I think a team like Virginia Tech could also wind up as a protected seed should they be able to get a couple wins of note in the ACC. And Villanova, they could slide into the protected seed that Marquette once had should they end up winning the Big East tournament themselves.
David, you had a comment?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that, or I was going to point out that we had no Big East teams in protected seed range, which is odd because we were looking as many as putting 6 or 7 in the field. It's just the way that worked out. But the question is, if Nova or Marquette win the Big East tournament, could they jump over someone? I'm trying to think of who that would be because the 4 line looks pretty tough, minus Kansas, and we all know that the committee's going to mess up and give them.
I would think an upset in the quarters by Kansas State might be something, a team that could drop down to. I think there are teams that could drop. A Wisconsin early loss in the Big Ten tournament. I think you're right, though.
Yeah.
But Tytel, let me go back to you for as we reveal our sixth line here. These are all four teams coming in here. And we see Buffalo, Nevada, Mississippi State, and Iowa State.
Oh, that is high.
So a couple of things on this one. Number one, I don't think Purdue wants to play with Buffalo just because we saw what Buffalo did in the tourney last year. And obviously, like, an 11 seed, whoever they face, is not a gimme. But to have to go to Hartford and play Buffalo in the northeastern part of the country is not easy. Texas Tech has to go to the Southwest to play a team from the Southwest. I like Houston over the Mississippi State. And Iowa State and LSU, those two teams have got a lot of problems going on and off the court. So that's just a weird one. I don't know how that one would shake out.
That might be where the 11 seed comes out and gets the Sweet 16 spot, actually. I'll see who that team is later. But
yeah, yeah. I did want to ask all of you, because I'm a little surprised that we still like Buffalo more than Wofford. Who do you think would – so if Wofford and Buffalo played in this
hypothetical – Well, David, you got to remember, this voting was done before tonight's game, so Wofford has one
but they'd already beaten Greensboro twice by about 50.
But now they've beaten him three times, which is even better. Yeah. Is it not?
Yeah. I've had Wofford at a Buffalo.
We're talking about Wofford. Rocco, the seven line, I think we'd be shocked if Wofford was not here. And lo and behold, there they are in Kentucky's bracket, along with Louisville, Cincinnati, and Auburn.
I like it. I think the only thing I had different is I've actually moved Auburn up to a six. I know we've hated their resume all year, but I think they're really performing well lately, and they're a pretty good sleeper pick to win this SEC tournament coming up. But otherwise, Wofford well-deserved. Cincinnati, if they miss out on the six, which they probably deserve to miss out on after their performance the other day, they belong here on the seven, and Louisville's all over, so seven's right for them. I like it.
Well, Tytel, what about Auburn? Should they be higher than this?
They're certainly trending upward. I feel bad for Tennessee. Of all the teams I don't want to face, it's the one that does beat me.
Yeah, they only played once. So if they do play again in the SEC tournament, that could not happen, by the way. But as of the moment, that could happen in the second round. Salika, that Cincinnati team in there, you're a guy from Cincinnati, although you're not exactly a Cincinnati fan. You think this is where they belong?
This is where they belong when you consider they failed to get a win against Houston and ended up splitting the season series with Central Florida. They could have really used a win against Ohio State at the beginning of the year to really go up much higher in the seed list.
Yeah, it's Cincinnati here, still a solid seed. I don't know who they'll face in the 7-10 game, but it's definitely a winnable game. And it sets them up to go out in the round of 32, which means all is normal in the world.
All right. Sleek, let me go back to you again for the 8 line here that should be flashing up on the top of the screen there as we see Oklahoma, Baylor, Ole Miss, and Iowa.
Yeah, Iowa is another team that's been trending down, not just because of the McCaffrey suspension, but losing the season finale at Nebraska certainly did not help when they were fully healthy. But a team like Oklahoma, a little bit surprising when you consider how badly they were struggling in January and early part of February, but they seem to have stabilized a bit.
Yeah, and David, when you look at these top 8 seed lines that we've put in so far, I think at this point we've got teams that, no matter what happens, should be in the tournament.
Oklahoma, despite – I mean, they really did kind of pull themselves out of the tailspin. I know they finished below 500 in conference. Was it even 4 games below 500?
But, I believe it was.
Yeah, but they've really been playing well. And I know categorically slash historically you don't take a team that's below 4 – that's 4 games below 500 – but categorically and historically, you take a team with a resume like that.
But as we saw with the committee last year, just because you go 13-5 in the Big Ten, Nebraska, you do not automatically
make Webb keeping Nebraska.
Yeah, but Tytel, if you look at this, on the win side with Oklahoma, not only the Quadrant 1 wins, but all those above the line, what we call the 2A, the top half of Tier 2 wins as well. There's a lot of good there to go with all those losses, which are not bad.
Can we just appreciate a world that we're living in where the best win on your tier 1A, like top of the line, is Wofford?
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah, look at that! Look at that 14 net for Wofford. They should be on the 4 line.
Yeah.
Tytel, let me stick with you as we reveal some potential first round matchups here. Reveal the 9 line here. Those 8 seeds. opponents. Oklahoma getting VCU, Baylor getting Syracuse, Ole Miss getting UCF, Iowa getting Seton Hall.
Interesting. Iowa and Seton Hall are a classic few teams going in opposite directions. I would not be surprised if Iowa drops to a double digit and Seton Hall keeps going up just the way they've been playing over the past 2 weeks and their chances for success in their conference tourneys this week.
Agreed.
UCF, I really think Taco Fall is this huge X factor that I don't know if you're going to get like a double-double and seven blocks out of him or if he's just going to be taken out of the offense, because when he brings the ball down, he just brings his size down to earth. But can you imagine Luke May trying to post up Taco Fall in like the second round? Good luck.
Yeah. Brock, what about these other two teams, VCU and Syracuse?
Yeah, sending Syracuse out to face Baylor in a potential second-round matchup with Gonzaga is kind of like flipping the script back. I can't remember the year, but Syracuse was a 1 and Gonzaga was an 8, and they played out in the East Coast, and Syracuse whipped them by about 30. So it could be some sweet revenge for Gonzaga there. VCU, I think, well-deserved at the 9 line. That's exactly where I got them. That could be a fun one against Virginia if they beat Oklahoma there.
David, yeah, I'm going to show you the 10 line here. These are the potential first round matches for those 7 seeds.
Okay.
Auburn's matchup against TCU, Cincinnati against Washington, Wofford St. John's, and Louisville, Minnesota.
TCU did get a couple of road wins. I think they're up to 3 now. So a 10 seed with their profile is consistent with about what the committee does. I'm not overly impressed with them, but this is probably about where they land. Washington, I'm just not big on. This looks about right for, again, if I'm guessing the committee and I'm not good at it, I think this is about where Washington's going to land, maybe even a line higher. But they haven't really played like it. And, you know, they do have the win at Oregon. There's some good there. But, I mean, Jesus, the loss to when you bottom out with a loss to Cal and you top off with nobody that's solidly in the field, how's that a 10?
Well, we got two Pac-12 experts. Let me start with our Washington guy first on that question. Rocco, what about your Huskies here with that? Hey, look, the Cal loss has moved up to quadrant 3. Look at that.
That was the big news this morning. But I, you know, in a weird way,
it's really the big news this morning. It was not on the front page of the Washington.
Oh man. Well, I kind of thought that loss was hidden in Q4. Now it's a little bit more exposed in Q3. Maybe it was better down there.
You had to scroll down to see it.
I would say if you guys are a big advocate for Wofford, my argument to you would be, who has Wofford beaten? And so if Wofford's going to get all this praise 7-6 line, then Washington should be treated pretty similarly. I know there's the Cal loss. I'll definitely say Wofford's got a better resume, but it's not much different. And the Huskies have 9 road wins. They have 18 wins over the top 3 quadrants. If you do, I posted a big bubble breakdown today. That's far and away the most amount of wins in the bubble picture. So there's a lot going for Washington still. I know the big black eye is no wins against the field. We'll see how this week goes.
Yeah, Tytel, we've got two other teams here, the Johnnies and Minnesota. What are your thoughts on those two teams here on the 10 line?
I feel that Minnesota's getting screwed because if they can slide over and play Michigan, they've actually, I believe, played 2 close games against them, single digits. They got blown out of the building by the Spartans. Obviously, if they're injured, I want to play the injured team, but it's a shame. It would be a nice rematch if Minnesota could play the Wolverines instead.
Actually, that's what got a bracketing problem there. They could not be in that region because they did play them twice.
Oh, you and your bracket rules.
Yeah, those bracket rules.
What about St. John's potentially losing to a 10 seed in DePaul should that shake out in the Big East tournament? I think that could seriously imperil St. John's if they were to lose that opening round game.
That's a hell of a take there, John.
We are definitely reaching the bubble here with teams that if they lose their next game could be in big time trouble. John, let me stick with you for the Stalika for the 11 seeds here. Buffalo gets Arizona State for Arizona last year. Nevada, Florida, Mississippi State, Ohio State, and Iowa State, Utah State.
Arizona State. At first glance, you're wondering what on earth are they doing up here, but despite having some losses in all 4 quadrants, they still have some wins of significance, including Kansas and Washington, among others. Florida, they're going to be a team that runs hot and cold. And Ohio State, I personally think they're closer to a first 4 team, especially when you look how they've played since Caleb Wesson's suspension.
Chad, pull up Arizona State as well.
David, I want to start with you with an issue I have with Florida. You had Florida voted the highest of anybody at 37 overall. I didn't even have them in the field. I'm sorry. This team has lost three games in a row. They got quadrant three losses there. They won at LSU and did nothing. Where is Florida's profile?
Well, I mean, well, first of all, look at who's around them. But, like, they won at LSU. They won at Alabama. Like, Alabama and Arkansas, I thought, were pretty good.
Are those two teams in our field? I haven't seen them.
They're not, but they're good at home. And again, like, I mean, you know, I akin it to Washington, but a little better.
Well, I guess, and Rocco, let me ask you this here, though. My problem with Florida is, unlike some of these other teams, you look, they lost at home to South Carolina and at home to Georgia. And
yeah, those are tough losses. And you got they all count, you know. And I think Florida is in danger because you look at their first three quadrants. They've played 26 games. They have an under 500 record in those games. They're 12-14. You guys interviewed Lenardi, three or four years ago. He said a really good thing to look at is the record with the Q4 removed, and Florida doesn't even have a winning record with that. So I think it puts them in trouble. But they are 8-8 away from Gainesville. So you take the away neutral record, and that's actually holding up pretty well against teams like Indiana and Alabama and the like. So I've got Florida like a last four in right now.
I don't take much offense to the South Carolina loss when you consider how the Gamecocks have played, but no excuse for losing to Georgia at home.
The Georgia loss is really bad.
But you can't lose to South Carolina at home, Sleeka, if you have all these other losses on your profile.
Okay, what line? This is the 11 line. 11 line. I had them on the 10. It's not like I had them five lines away.
Tytel, here's that Arizona State team, which is the same problem here. Not only quadrant three, but quadrant four losses.
What's their net?
I know, because I was there for the Princeton loss. They could have won it. They lost at the end. Washington State by 21 points. That's borderline inexcusable. They're hanging their hat on Kansas, and obviously, like, and some good tier one, a ton of tier two, but I think it's going to add up. And if you look at this one, the sneaky little 61 net ranking at Oregon, where they lost by 28 points a couple weeks ago, keep an eye on the Ducks. I'm not saying they're going to win the Pac-12. I mean, I did say they're going to win
the
Pac-12.
You did say.
I agree with you. I think the Ducks are going to win the Pac-12 tournament as well. I'm on board with this Duck love, especially after
If that happens, Chad, do you think there's going to be three Pac-12 teams in this tournament? Because I don't think
Absolutely not. I don't think that Arizona – I think Arizona
not
State –
not a big fan of Arizona State.
But, Chad, were you looking at my ballot for the Jerome earlier today?
Tytel, are you not sure we're not going to get three Pac-12 teams in the Final Four? To match 85.
We have four spots left, four at-large spots left. I'm going to start. They are our two first four games. They are the next four teams up. So, Rocco, I'm going to start by showing you the first of those first four games. This should be coming up, I think, in the West region there. Temple and Indiana.
Temple and Indiana. I think those are two deserving teams at this point. Well, Indiana, very questionable. Temple, I do think, belongs for sure right now. They've got winning records against top two and top three quadrants. They got a nice 10 wins away from Philadelphia, or maybe not all the way out of Philadelphia, but away from their home arena. And, you know, it's just – yeah, I think Temple's just done a little bit more than the rest of the bubble. So I like them getting in at least. And then for Indiana, I mean, this is the debate of all debates. They've got the two wins over Michigan State. But besides that, I mean, their best road win is Penn State, which is looking better by the day. I agree. But their neutral Butler win has really diminished over time.
Well, there was the win at Michigan State. I mean, that wasn't a bad
road win.
Right, yeah, I said the sweep. But, yeah, Yeah, but the thing I don't like is they're 4-9 away from home. And they're, you know, they have a losing record against top two and top three quadrants, and it's a lot of losses. So you got to take in the whole season.
Yeah, and like a Sleeka circled for us there, Indiana, Ohio State, huge 8-9 game coming up in the Big Ten tournament. The loser, the winner, I think, is going to feel decent on Selection Sunday. The loser, really going to be sweating.
Well, one of the things, because I had Indiana pretty, well, when I say pretty far in, I mean, I think I had them above the first four. And what I ended up looking at was their winning percentage against teams that are probably first ballot teams. And while it's not anywhere close to 500, it's still higher than what you normally see out of the bubble. I mean, they do have a lot of wins against teams that we have on our top five lines, and I just can't keep them out. It wouldn't shock me if they were left out. I wouldn't exactly think it a travesty, but all in all, they've lifted some heavy weight.
Well, let's go. There's two teams left here, Titel. Let me show them to you and get your thoughts on this. They're coming up here in the East region. They should be showing up on the screen here any second now. Creighton and Belmont. Bruins getting in with our last at-large spot.
That is going to be a fascinating game. I really have been impressed by Creighton. I had kind of written them off, but they really are making a nice little comeback. And Belmont, like, I'm not convinced. I mean, they have a great resume, but so do a lot of other teams. And I just wish they had a little more in the Tier 1 area, as we'll see very shortly. At Murray State is good. At Lipscomb is a little less good because Liberty beat Lipscomb. Not a ton of Tier 3, but they were both not great. And, like, it doesn't scream to me like this team is definitely in the tournament. And as Rocco likes to say, a couple of big thieves could ruin this whole thing for Belmont.
And Sleeka, this Creighton team, 5 wins in a row coming out of nowhere. And I like this team, maybe the best of these four final four teams that we just put in here.
Xavier and Creighton seem to both be a tag team of who are going to be the hottest teams in the Big East right now. Xavier had won 6 of 7, but as we've noted, Creighton has now won 5 in a row, including a win at Marquette, which completely changed the equation for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, Creighton doing the reverse of what we normally
– this is reverse Creighton, isn't it, this year?
Reverse Creighton. Reverse Greg McDermott, for that matter. But they – like, earlier today, I said in the email, there is a team in my field that I cannot believe is there. But I kept looking at them. I haven't said but maybe 2 or 3 sentences about them all year. I do the write-ups. I think there were days that we didn't even highlight their games. I had Creighton in my field, and I guess I wasn't the only one. They are, and the thing about them that Belmont does not have going for them, they are still A, still playing, and B, playing against teams that could raise their profile even more.
Let's take a look at the top four teams that were out. These are the four teams that were the closest to getting at-large bids. Of course, teams that are already in through automatic bids will not be on here, but Texas was the next team up, followed by Clemson, Furman, and NC State. And Rocco, when you look at that, you kind of really got to hold your nose at those four teams, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly have pretty much written off Texas unless they win the Big 12 title. And Furman, unfortunately, is just a little too far away to realistically get in with their season being over. NC State, Clemson playing each other, so I think that's a de facto elimination game. And then even so, the winner gets Virginia, so they could easily both end up out. So, yeah, you do got to hold your nose. I'm surprised Alabama didn't make that first four, personally.
Yeah, well, Titel, what about this Clemson team? They did pick up back-to-back wins. They don't have really anything that bad on the profile. I guess they kind of don't have much good, though, either, do they?
It's the one thing if you're hanging your hat, as some teams are, on your one win, like Alabama, who's only beaten Kentucky or something. But when your only win is Virginia Tech at home, I don't know. I understand it's Tier 1A, but, like, that's a dangerous nail to put your hat on. And I think that if they lose to NC State, they're done. And even if they win, I'm not sold that they're in.
But they do have the chance with the Virginia game, at least, as would NC State, because NC State, I think, is the same thing as done if they lose this game to Clemson. And maybe done, David, with a win with that 352 non-conference streak to schedule.
Right. I'll save this for my final thought, but I would like this screen up for my final thought.
Okay.
Can we put a Furman next to NC State right now? Because I also want to compare, the rest of Furman's non-conference schedule. We know about their win at Villanova. We also know they took a try at LSU, couldn't quite come up with the win there. But the other problem that may bite them in the rear is that non-conference strength of schedule, which is also 262.
Yeah, look at all that. Look at all that.
Or 90 spots higher.
Look at all this quadrant four and even three non-D1
games. Yeah, they destroyed it. Way to go in quad four.
And they lost a home game against Samford, which is now a quad four loss just barely. So that doesn't help either.
And the only other win of note was at Loyola Chicago, but the Ramblers, not nearly the same team that they were last year.
Yeah, a few other teams that did get votes, but may still have a shot to get up into the field here. There's company also considered Alabama, who you just mentioned, Rocco, the fifth overall, Georgetown, Lipscomb, UNC Greensboro, and we mentioned them. Oregon actually got a little bit of love. Somebody voted them in the top 55.
They were
And I don't
55. I don't think they were in my field.
I think they were your number 55, David. That's how they got on there, actually. Okay. But Rocco, you want to address Alabama a little bit? You mentioned them earlier.
Yeah, well, I think Alabama is they're right next to Creighton. I have them below Creighton in my analysis, but I think that win against Kentucky carries water. Their neutral win against Liberty now looks even better. And they've got, they needed to do a little bit more on the road. I agree. They're going to have to show up here in the SEC tournament to get in. But I don't think they're far from the Creighton, Indiana, Belmont world, in my opinion.
And a huge game with Ole Miss to start out the SEC tournament also. So they, they have a chance to pick up a quality win too. So, or to lose bad.
Right.
Let's quickly reveal the rest of the 12 line here. The in the South region there, Villanova's potential first-round matchup would be against Murray State, the OVC champion. And Marquette's potential first-round matchup here, David, would be against
Andy Duran. Andy Duran making the field inside the bubble. All right. Good for him. Strength and conditioning. VCU strength and conditioning coach. Andy and Durahan, like a round of 64 matchup against VCU breaks bracketing rules.
Against Marquette, yes. Yeah.
Andy's coming to the Bay Area. I love it.
Right. Let's fix this. It's actually Liberty. They're getting Marquette. I don't know what happened there. But
wrong Virginia school.
Yes, two pretty dangerous teams for what we saw in one of those conference tournaments, both Murray and Murray. And Tytel, I got to ask you about Murray State. You had a chance to speak to a pretty decent player today, didn't you?
By a little luck and a little perseverance, I was able to get a little one-on-one time with Ja Morant today. Super nice. Just only five questions, a quick hitter, as they say. But it's amazing. Like, his dad really, like, helped train him his whole life. His dad, who was a pro basketball player back in the day abroad, I believe. And then he ends up on an AAU team with some guy named Zion Williamson, which I only wish I could have seen the highlights of those games. And then he's kind of this under-recruited guy because he wasn't that great in high school compared to some of the other McDonald's All-Americans out there like Zion. And then he goes to Murray State and just keeps rising up the ranks and almost single-handedly, like, won the OVC tournament himself. And now I don't envy the defending champs because they've been trending downwards over the past couple weeks. And I think a lot of people, if that shakes out, would pick Murray State to pull off the 12-5 upset.
I agree with you.
They match up real well with Villanova.
And that's typical Villanova. They either lose in the first weekend or they win it all. So
yeah.
Perfect. Let's quickly go through the rest of the teams here. The 13 line, these are the matchups against the four seeds. Kansas getting a very good UC Irvine team. Florida State, Yale, Wisconsin, Georgia State, K-State, dangerous New Mexico State team also.
Yeah. Real dangerous. We've been covering some of these teams on the video notebooks, championship week video notebooks. I know we're running through them kind of fast, but if you want more coverage, just check those out.
Right. And the 14 line, these are the matchups against the three seeds. Purdue getting an Old Dominion team that lost two in a row heading into their conference tournament. Otherwise, they're looking a little higher. Omaha, now the pick out of the Summit League after South Dakota State gets upset. Vermont and Hofstra there has survived two close games in their conference tournament, but will be playing in the CAA finals tomorrow night. The 15 line, Tennessee is going to be matching up against nobody.
Oh, man, that's rough.
I have no idea. Where are we here? Okay, Tennessee, let's try this again. 15 line, take two. Tennessee getting Bucknell. Michigan, yeah. Gardner-Webb. Kentucky, Wright State, a little close teams to each other there.
Yeah, kind of fun one in Columbus there.
Columbus, yeah, and Michigan State against Montana. Finally, the 16 seeds here, the matches for the one seeds. Virginia gets the winner of a Norfolk State SFPA game. Gonzaga gets Sam Houston State. Carolina gets winner of a Prairie View Iona game. And Duke gets a Missouri Valley Conference team. That shows you how bad the Valley was this year.
Yeah.
16 seed for its champion, Bradley.
Right, and
I expect them to well down
the stretch, but no chance there.
I expect Bradley to probably move up to the 15th seed because there will be an upset in some other conference tournament team on the 16 line. But having that whole screen now done there, what I want to do is run through each of you for any other combination of final thoughts or their comments about the bracket. And Sleek, let me start with you.
Well, we kind of touched on this as far as some of the championship week video notebooks, but kind of lost in the brush of the Missouri Valley tournament was Barry Hinson stepping down from Southern Illinois. He never made the NCAA tournament with the Salukis, but More notable were some of his snubs back in Missouri State when I believe they set a record for highest RPI not to make the field, which would have been, I think it was 19 or 21.
It was 21, and they had beaten, I think, they had beaten and finished ahead of multiple teams that got in ahead of them. It was, first of all, the biggest snub, but then when you look at the teams that they took instead, it was ridiculous.
And you got to also remember, though, Barry Hanson also has the record for the best and most sold barbecue sauce of any head coach in division.
I love Barry. I in all seriousness, you hope that that guy remains part of the game because he's so good for the game.
Tytel.
I'm going to do a bracket comment and a final thought. Okay. The bracket comment is the Midwest region. Had Duke played these teams even 2 weeks ago, I think they might lose to all of the top four seeds here. But Michigan State injuries, LSU's chaos, and Kansas State's Dean Wade injury, I think Duke has a smooth ride right into the Final Four today if Zion is healthy, which we shall see. My final thought, not on the bracket, is just a little kudos to Gino Auriemma. He has now played 120 games in the American Athletic Conference. You know how many he has lost?
Zero.
He is 120-0. Talk about a guy owning a league.
I guess we won't get fired this week then. Yeah. Rocco.
So I got a little good news and bad news for my final thought, just on the bracket here. So the good news, I wish this was the real bracket, because if it was today and this was the real bracket, I would have been 68 out of 68. So glad that we're all in agreement here today, guys. The bad news is I'd be a little disappointed with Washington's draw. Not to say that I actually kind of do prefer a 10 over an 8 or 9, but Cincinnati always loses in the second round, not the first round, and then – even so, I think Michigan's going to be pretty dangerous in the tournament.
Yeah, I agree with that. David, you wanted NC State's profile back up too.
NC State and Clemson, because it applies to both of them. One of the critiques, if you've been like on Twitter and anywhere else on the internet, which is just a treasure trove of information and opinions, they always look at the under-the-radar teams, Lipscomb and Belmont in particular, and talk about, well, who did they play? Well, okay, Lipscomb won at TCU. They lost at Louisville by four, and they lost rather handily, albeit to Clemson. That's a fair point. Belmont won at TCU. So when you look at, like, what those teams have done against bubble teams or better on the road, both of those teams at least have one win, despite having very limited chances. If you're an under-the-radar team, you essentially have the first 6 weeks of the season to get the kind of games scheduled that will impress the committee, and you have to play them on very unfavorable terms. They're not built in. If you look at Clemson and you look at NC State, count up the number of road wins that both of those teams have against teams that are on the bubble or better. You don't have to. I'll tell you the answer. It's zero. So my opinion is, if you're going to hold that standard to the under-the-radar schools, then why not hold them to it as well? They had zero wins despite having far more opportunities.
Oh, well, I will do say, David, the winner of this 8-9 game between Clemson and NC State will have at least a win away from home against somebody that's
– right.
But that's the best you could say. It's not even a true road win, though.
Right. It's not a true road win. So, and yeah, these teams have beaten – good teams, but they've beaten them at home. And those good teams, while those teams are good overall, they're not necessarily good on the road. So have they really done anything that's that hard to do that really warrants it being a clear decision over a team like Belmont or Lipscomb?
Exactly.
And I know, I mean, Tytel guesses the committee. He does it better than I do. He does it better than most people on earth. He thinks they're going to take NC State, and he's probably right. I just wish that they would look at things a little differently and maybe peel back the onion a little bit and look at how difficult was it really to beat a team that's good overall but bad on the road at home.
Well, I guess on that note, we will find out a lot when they play Clemson, and we're going to find out a lot over this last week of conference tournaments when everybody's going to have multiple games, or most teams will have multiple games. But I do want to thank everyone for joining us. On behalf of David Griggs, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, John Tytel, and John Stalica, I'm Chad Sherwood, and we will be back with a lot more video notebooks every night, and we'll talk to you again real soon.